You're listening to Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby.
And Barnaby is loving this.
No filter.
You have no filter.
That's
yeah. Obvious.
That's true. That's
you
a good thing.
Just say whatever comes into your mind.
Yeah.
You don't really modulate your yeah. feelings at all.
Yeah. It's a good thing for me, but it's a bad thing for water.
And he gets hit by a puck in a game, a slap shot. And he calls 911. 911, Dennis says, I'd be shot. I'd be shot. So all of a sudden, about 20 minutes later, the cops come and ambulance come, and he just comes walking out of the house with a limp. And the cops are like, where have you been shot? Where have you been shot? He goes, in the foot. And he's like, big slap shot. Big slap shot. Fucking guy called 911 because he had a broken foot.
Now here's Matthew Barnaby.
Hello, hello, hello. This is Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby. I'm your host, Matthew Barnaby. You can follow me on Twitter, MattBarnaby3636. A little out of sorts today. Just got back from Vancouver. I'm actually getting ready to take a train off to Toronto for a few days, go in studio on Sirius XM, Channel 91, NHL Network, recap the draft and set up free agency, which is coming very quickly. The time period has started where teams can start to talk to RFAs, UFAs, and we'll have some decisions in the coming days. But a little out of sorts, flying to Vancouver. Vancouver was awesome. I mean, awesome. Love seeing my good old buddies and Jay McKee, who I play with in Buffalo, Bob Bugner, a former coach of Florida Panthers, who just signed on with San Jose again. He'll take over that D core, pretty damn good D core. I bet you he's pretty happy that they signed Eric Carlson. Bundy, which is Warren Reichel, part owner of the Windsor Spitfires, longtime NHL hockey player, partners with Bob Bugner. But so many different guys along the way, and I see in Sheldon Keefe. It's funny where you see them, right? Not only on the draft floor, but at the Roxy. At the Roxy. The Roxy isn't, I'm not going to say it's not what it used to be. It probably always, or it is what it always was. It's nasty in there. The hotel D6 at our bar, I stayed at the JW Marriott, was phenomenal. Thanks to Sirius XM, put us up in a pretty nice fucking spot, to tell you the truth. But the bar at the hotel was incredible. It was beautiful. But we always have to end up at the Roxy. That's what former players do. We end up at the Roxy. So a couple nights of 3:30 in the morning, hot dog on the side of the road, and back to bed was my weekend. I started Periscope, by the way. I didn't do any Periscoping. Oh, I did a little bit from the draft floor, but I'm trying to figure it out. I think I got it. I don't know how to start with the camera facing myself yet. I can start the broadcast, and maybe someone can help me out there. Tweet at me at MattBarnaby3636 if you know how to start facing you. I'm not the most technically sound, but I have figured that out a little bit. I think it's pretty cool. I think it's pretty cool to be able to Periscope and do that and let you know what I'm doing, and I enjoy watching other people's Periscope, so I've joined that. But this is a draft podcast. This one and the next one, I will not be having guests. There's just too much to talk about to fit a guest in. And once these next two, we get through free agency, get past the draft, then I have a star-studded lineup coming. Star-studded. I have Colin Coward, who is my favorite radio guy out there with FS1. I worked with him at ESPN. He's hilarious. If you don't listen to him, please do. You'll love it. He's a multitude of sports, and his podcast, it's The Herd, but on FS1, he will be joining me. Paul Bissonnette coming up, Marty St. Louis, Dave Andrechuk, John Scott, so many to come in the near future. So I know a lot of people love the interviews. I love the interviews too. I just want to do interviews the right way, and right now with the draft and free agency, trades, there's just way too much to be able to fit in a guest and do it properly. So another thing, I don't know if a lot of you guys fly a lot. I fly a lot. and I'm having some bad luck flying. Not with delays or anything, but it seems like every fucking plane I get on, there is a baby. I think, well, just on the way home from Vancouver, there was one on the way there and one on the way back, but the one on the way back, poor little newborn. This little guy screamed for 3 hours straight. And have it be that it's the one time I forget my earphones. I don't have the earphones. And I listen to this baby while I'm a little hungover cry for 3 hours, and all I want to do is sleep. I think there should be a place where we go when you sign in, when you pre-check in, to find out if there's a baby on. You should disclose it. You should have to disclose, I have a baby on the plane, or three babies, and I get to choose my seat accordingly, because I was two rows from this newborn. Holy fuck, did this baby have lungs. This baby's going to be the Carrie Underwood or the Eric Church in the future, because, man, did he have some lungs. So I really think that's, I want to pre-check in. I want to know where the babies are. Love babies. Just don't love them on airplanes. I it bothers my ears. I understand. I get it. I understand you have to travel with them. I just want to know where they are. I want to know where they are so I can sit as far away as possible so I can get some sleep. Probably if I didn't go to the Roxy till 3:30 in the morning after the draft with all the guys, it probably wouldn't have been as bad. If I wouldn't have forgot my earphones, my fault, I get it. Probably wouldn't have been as bad. Today, it's a draft podcast. We will redo or talk about what I thought were some great picks and what the future holds for some of these guys. The winners, some surprises, what's to come in the coming days, trades, free agency, buyouts, top picks, little story after from my draft in Montreal. By the way, if you're a player that just got drafted and you're underage, probably shouldn't be in the bar where all the scouts and GMs and coaches hang out. Just saying. I'm just saying. If you're of age, hey, I get it. Go there. I also want to go back through. I picked Buffalo Sabres. We're going to go back through some of the Buffalo Sabres drafts, because I want to reiterate out there, it's a great day. And I know. One of the favorite things I watched from this draft, and being so far removed from being drafted in 1992 in Montreal, that was where my draft was, is just seeing the jubilation, watching these kids, how excited they were, and I got to interview every one of them after they were drafted. Come by our table at SiriusXM. And just watching their faces, and some just so surprised that they got taken where they were. But seeing parents and without their kids even around up on the concourse after, on day two, watching them cry and just knowing all the fruits of their labor came to fruition. Pretty awesome. Fuck, was it awesome. I really, being a dad, having went through it, it's just awesome. There's some sad stories too of guys that didn't get drafted that expected, and you're always going to have that. I just want people to remember the Marty St. Louis out there, that Mark Giordano, Norris Trophy winner. You get drafted. I don't care if it's in the first round. I don't care if you don't get drafted. First rounders get an extra chance to play, but it's not a confirmation just because you're drafted in the first round that you're going to play. And I'm going to go through some drafts. David Cooper's a name that comes to mind. Drafted 11th overall in 1992 by the Buffalo Sabres. I never played a game with him in Buffalo. He ended up playing 30 games, I believe, for the Toronto Maple Leafs. But here's a guy that had it all, that didn't put the work in, thus, never really played. I was a fourth rounder and played over 830 games. Marty St. Louis, never drafted, up and down in the minors, cut from team to team, but he decided to put his work boots on and continue to forge ahead. Hall of Famer, Stanley Cup champion, former Hart Trophy winner, Olympic gold medalist. I mean, the guy's done absolutely everything. Giordano, another one. Norris Trophy winner, makes a shitload of money, never drafted. So if you weren't drafted, PPW, prove people wrong. Fucking go do it. Go do it. Show them why you should have been drafted and take a chance on you. And some people, it's hard to project. It's hard to project hockey players at 17 years old, what they're going to be. The Jack Hughes, the Kakos, the Byrams, that's easy. The Connor McDavids, Austin Matthews, Sidney Crosby, that's easy. They're stars. They're superstars. But there's a lot of outliers. A lot of guys in the first round will never play a game in the National Hockey League. And there's guys in the fourth and fifth and sixth round, the Mark Stones, that'll make their mark. Trust me, we'll go back through that draft, this draft, at some point. And we'll say, fuck, how did that guy get drafted in the fifth round? How did this guy get drafted in the first round? It happens every year, and it won't change. That's the difference between our draft and the NBA draft and the NFL draft is we're drafting younger kids that are a lot of times underdeveloped. And you don't know how they're going to develop, how they're going to develop in the next couple years. They aren't ready to step in. There's two guys right now that are going to step in. Jack Hughes, Kaapo Kakko. Probably one out of the others will step in and play. Who is it? Is it Alex Turcotte? My bet would be Bowen Byram, a defenseman from Vancouver, drafted by the Avalanche. To me, I think he has a chance to start there. This probably facilitates a trade for Tyson Barry. That decor is going to be awesome. But let's start at the top. Jack Hughes. Everyone knew he was going first overall. I think a lot of people made the Kaapo Kakko with what he did this year playing against men in the World Championships. Jack Hughes didn't play a lot for Team USA. When he did get the opportunity at the end of the tournament, he was very good. There's a kid that I watched all year long play with the U.S. National Development Team. New Jersey has a stud. A bona fide number one. No slight to Nico Hischier, who a couple years ago was the first overall pick. Another centerman. Jack Hughes is way better. Way better. He's a cross between Johnny Gaudreau, Clayton Keller, Patrick Kane. All-time leading scorer for the U.S. National Development Team. That had the likes of Patrick Kane in the past. Austin Matthews. Jack Hughes is a stud. A stud. Little slight, I don't care. Skating ability, off the charts. Will to win, off the charts. Makes players around him so much better. Can take it to the house and fire the puck. So elusive, so dynamic. New Jersey is slotted down the middle. Wow. I mean, sometimes you need to be lucky to be good. Pittsburgh was lucky to get Mario Lemieux. Pittsburgh was lucky to get Sidney Crosby. New Jersey is lucky to get Jack Hughes. New York Rangers also land a stud. Much different player than Jack, but Kaapo Kakko is physically ready to play in the National Hockey League as of today. 6'2", 195, goes hard to the net. Actually a better passer than I think he gets credit for. Out of Finland, man, they create some great hockey players. Whatever they are doing over there, which is small area games and really focusing on skill development, but a country that has 5 to 6 million people, man, they're generating some great, great hockey players. Kaapo Kakko is no different. I think this really expedites, not only with this pick, but Jacob Trouba, and they're going to try to land Panarin. Kaapo Kakko is a stud. Having played in New York, I love that Jersey and New York. As much as I hated New Jersey when I played for the Rangers because it was all red, white, and blue. It's awesome in that market that you're going to have two superstars going against each other for years to come. I mean, years to come. MSG will be rocking. And I love it. Capocacco is a stud. Chicago gets Kirby Dach, big centerman. Probably not ready to step in right away, but a lot of people thought they might go Alex Turcotte. Bowen Byram goes 4 to Colorado. I talked about him. I think he'll get a chance. Probably most, well, he's definitely most NHL ready on the back end. But he just dominated the Western Hockey League this year. Alex Turcotte in LA. He'll be the heir apparent to the Anze Kopitar. Good chance for him to learn under Anze in the 200-foot game. Very reminiscent of a Jonathan Toews or an Anze Kopitar. Both great 200-foot players. Alex, tell your dad not to pick his nose. Anyone out there can actually check it out. I think Barstool Sports had it. I think Barstool had it, had the picture of it. If you're going top five people, tell your dad. Don't be searching for gold up your nose. Don't be picking your nose on TV. Cameras are probably going to be on you. And in today's day and age, it's going to hit Twitter or Instagram. Or a blog. So anyone that hasn't seen Alex Turcotte's dad pick his nose, find it. It's out there on the internet. The one surprise of the first round. Moritz Seider. The big German. 6'3", 208. I remember interviewing him after he was picked about 10 minutes. And you could not wipe the smile off this kid's face. He's going to be a big boy. I mean, he's 208 pounds now. And he's still thin. But hands, wow. Big, big hands. Gonna fill out. This was a reach for them. And that's, again, every list is different. And you have your rankings where they are. But if someone loves you and they don't want to wait, they believe you're the guy, they're coming after you. Seider was the one surprise, the big surprise of the first round. Dylan Cousins, I like him. Needs a little bit of time. Good pick by Buffalo. Broberg to Edmonton will be a great D for them, a position they desperately need going forward. Trevor Zegras from the U.S. development team goes to Anaheim and rounding out the top 10. Puds Colson, tough interview. We needed he's the Russian kid. A really good, plays hard, plays really, really hard. Plays like a North American. A true North American, drives the net hard. He has a contract for 2 years in the KHL, so won't be in Vancouver for a couple more years, but he's going to help them out with being the power forward that he is. Terrible interview. I don't even know why we got him. We had to use an interpreter, and it was awkward. I mean, real awkward. Couple steals for me in the first round, Cole Caulfield. Montreal Canadiens, 5'7". Thought he'd go earlier than this. Thought Philadelphia might take him. They went Cam York right before him, a defenseman. Cole Caulfield is a 5'7", Alex DeBrincat prototype that all he does is score goals. 72 goals. And Montreal wasn't afraid of his size. I mean, just look at Gallagher in Montreal. Look at Gallagher, right? It's not all about size. That's what she said. But Cole Caulfield scores goals. Power play that absolutely was putrid last year. Gets a bona fide, the best goal scorer in the draft. Bar none. No one even close. Cole Caulfield's the guy. Everyone says, oh, he plays with Jack Hughes. Of course he's going to score goals. Fuck you. I don't care. You don't think he's going to get play in Montreal and play on the fourth line, do you? No. He's going to go play with either Domi or Kakanyemi. He's going to play with a guy that can pass the puck. And he's going to put it in the back of the net. Montreal got a great one in Cole Caulfield. Great one. Funny kid, too. Real funny. To me, another steal in the first round. A kid I watched when he was 14 years old. And as soon as I saw him play, I had tweeted out, this is going back, God, 3-4 years ago. He was like 14 playing against 16-year-olds. Dominant. Big kid, 6'3", 212, another product of the national development team. Johnny Beecher, Boston Bruins, you got a good one. I think he could be a better Jake DeBrusk, but very similar in a lot of their traits. Big kid, skates really well for a size. I mean, really, really. You don't see guys 6'3", 212 at his age skate the way he does. Little pigeonholed where he was as being a centerman. You had Jack Hughes, you had Alex Turcotte, then you had Johnny Beecher. So wasn't set up to dominate point-wise. But I think as he develops, he could be one of those guys that really, really, when you look 2-3 years down the road, is a number two center in the National Hockey League. Point-wise, he's at least a three and a shutdown three because of his size and skating ability. But I think he can be much more. I think he's got the attributes to dominate at times. Consistency has been a problem or an issue, maybe circumstance. But I like Johnny Beecher. I've liked him for years and years and years. So to Boston fans, great job. Day two, you always look for teams. You have to hit in day one. You have to hit with your first rounder, but day two is about finding diamonds in the rough. The Mark Stones late. You need to find guys that will project, that project, and that's what good teams do. They project well and they draft well. You have to do well in the draft, especially in a cap era where ELCs are so important. Entry-level contracts. When you have a cap, you need guys that are coming into the league that can be young guys that contribute. If you don't have that, you have no chance to succeed because you have to go to free agency and pay for players or trade for players. The only way the Tampa Bays and the Torontos, why they're so good, the Bostons, they draft their own players and they have them on entry-level contracts, not making a lot of money. That's how you're successful. That's how you determine long-term success. The draft. That's why it's so important. And we don't hear about these guys that are drafted second, third, and through seven for years to come. But it's really, really important. The good teams, you have to draft well. And if you don't, you're not going to have success. Those GMs will not last long. Will not last long. Who's my winner? Well, it has to, the two ultimate winners get the two best players in the draft. New Jersey and New York. But New Jersey on top of, and I even got to throw both of them in, and we'll get to it in a bit, but New York lands Jacob Trouba this week. Stud defenseman. Now you got your number one defenseman. Going to cost you a lot when you renegotiate, but that's part of doing business. And PK Subban going to New Jersey. I mean, you're starting to dramatically change the dynamic of your team. Another winner, I said, Montreal, Cole Caulfield. I think they did really, really well. Carolina, I thought their draft picks, drafting a lot of Finns and going where they are going forward. I really think they did really, really well with their draft. But going back to Jersey and New York, my true winners, it's because of what they did besides the draft as well. PK Subban, say what you want about PK Subban. I don't care. I'll take PK Subban on my fucking team any day of the week. And they got him for Santini and Davies and 2 second-round picks. Steven Santini might play long-term, might not. Davies might play, might not. Just signed out of Northeastern. Good players. Second-round picks might play, might not. I don't know. PK Subban will be the best defenseman for the New Jersey Devils for at least the next 3 years. And why were they able to not give up that much? Because they were willing and they had cap space. They were willing to eat the $9 million cap hit for Nashville to be able to sign Roman Josi. There were better deals out there for PK Subban. There weren't a lot of teams in the mix because of the number that he makes. Nashville was willing to eat $3 to $3.5 million of that, and they would have got a better deal. But in the end, David Poile looked at having to sign Roman Josi, and he's going to make around $9 million, and try to acquire Matt Duchene, who's going to cost between $9 and $10.5 million a year. So in the end, when he looked at the deal on the table, he got assets back. He cleared $9 million of cap space to try to make his team better. And for those of you who say, PK Subban's all about PK Subban, listen, I've talked to a lot of his teammates. I've met him several times. And does he like a show? Yeah. Why do we hate a guy that loves hockey and loves a show? He's still a great hockey player. Elite skater, can play physical, got a bomb of a shot. I love PK. I like personality. And I know some GMs and coaches out there don't like having a personality bigger than life. Listen, I was like PK without the talent. Let's be honest. I was a big, big personality in the locker room. And I never had a problem with a coach or players that I played with. I was who I was. PK is who he is. Loves the game. Why don't we want more guys that love the game? Instead of giving you the politically right answer every time. By the way, PK engulfs himself. Whether it's self-serving, I treat people or I judge people on the way that they treat me. And every time I've met PK Subban, he's been gracious, he's been fun, he's been laughing, he's been smiling, and full of life. Do I think he does it a little bit for the show? Yeah, of course I do. But do I also love what PK Subban brings to the table in just production and who he is as a player? Absolutely. Absolutely. If anyone can fucking tell me that he's not a good hockey player, I'll make a case why. Just don't say because he is who he is and he's not a good guy. Bullshit. Tell me why. Can he not skate? Tell me his teammates fucking hate him, because I haven't heard the case. Does he maybe in Montreal pissed off a few people? Maybe. Maybe there's some people that didn't like that. Maybe Mark Bergevin didn't like that. But the people that I've come to know, I've never heard that. Former Norris Trophy winner, by the way. 408 points in 645 games. Last year was a down year for PK Subban. 31 points. 63 games. Missed 19. 59 points the year before with 16 goals as a D-man. Plus 18. 40 points in 66 games the year before. We all remember, and then he went 51, 60, 53, 38, and 42 games. PK Subban can play. PK Subban makes your team better, and he has made New Jersey a lot better and a lot more desirable. Ray Shero deserves a lot of credit here. A lot of credit. And they have a guy by the name of Taylor Hall to sign. Taylor Hall can pick anywhere he wants. I'm not going to say this is going to put them over the top. But you land Jack Hughes at first overall. Now you sign PK Subban. Tell me that doesn't bode well for a guy like Taylor Hall. I guarantee it does. And when Ray Shero looked into that crystal ball, he's like, how do I keep Taylor Hall? Now, not only do I have Nico Hischier, now I have Jack Hughes, the next coming. The next closest to Connor McDavid that we will see in the coming years. PK Subban, who can run the power play and has a bomb. They're all of a sudden a much more desirable team to be around. Listen, I wouldn't want to live in New Jersey, even though there's some great spots. It's not the most attractive spot to go, but you are close to New York. But if you want to win, they weren't there a week ago. They're getting closer. More to come. And now they've become a lot more desirable with the likes of Jack Hughes and PK Subban. Great move by Ray Shiro. This is bigger than just a trade and winning now. This is about signing Taylor Hall, one of the best goal scorers in the game today. Great job, Ray Shiro. One of the best guys around, by the way. Vancouver picks up JT Miller. Not as flashy as PK Subban, but a guy in Vancouver, I think we look at where they're at, and they have Jack's brother, Quinn Hughes, who should play a prominent role going forward. JT Miller, you look at Tampa, they get rid of some cap space. I think he has 4 more years left at just over $5 million. Another trade that, you know, we knew Tampa's trying to move money around. We know that they got to create cap space. They have Braden Point that needs a new contract. They have some great guys under ELCs, entry-level contracts I talked about before, but Braden Point's going to be the big one. And we're talking between $9, $10.5 million on a long-term deal. So someone had to go. I know the guy they wanted to try to get rid of was Callahan, but JT Miller is the one that feels the wrath and goes from Tampa to Vancouver, where he will be counted on in a top six role. Leafs, big week for the Leafs. We didn't know what the Leafs were going to do. They're all over the map. They have so many balls that Kyle Dubas is juggling, and Marner's the big question mark. What's that number going to be? Is he going to get an offer sheet? Does he take a hometown discount of $9 million? Not a fucking chance. Does he go for $12 million? Does he want 11-6 like Austin Matthews? Does he get an offer sheet? Does Lou Lamoriello come after him? They were in serious trouble against the cap. Kyle Dubas pulled one out of his ass this week. He's going to get a long-term deal, I don't want to say a long-term deal. 3 or 4 year deal for Kasperi Kapanen, who was great this year. 3 or 4 year deal for Janssen, who was very good this year. Both guys scored 20 goals. And locks him up for not crazy numbers, just 3.5, 3.75, 3.25. That's where the numbers are going to fall in. All a while getting Carolina to take Marleau and not eat up any of his cap number. He doesn't have to eat up any of his salary. Marleau goes to Carolina. Yes, there is a premium or a price to pay when you move a guy that no one wants. And no one really wants Marleau where he is now at $6 million. And that cap hit. So you need to find the Arizonas and the Ottawas and the Carolinas, teams that haven't spent a lot of money or aren't up against the cap, and say, please take our guy off our hands. And that GM sits back and goes, well, we don't want him. But how about you give us Kasperi Kapanen on top? No, we can't do that. Can't do that. Okay. How about you give us Janssen? We'll take him. We'll take that Marleau contract. You just have to give us Janssen. No, I can't do that. Then you circle back and you're trying to figure out, you desperately, it's all poker, right? You're playing chicken, essentially, or poker. Not trying to show your hand. But Don Waddell from Carolina knows Kyle Dubas has to make the move. He has to move Marleau. These GMs are smart guys. They know and you try to make the best deal possible. Waddell knows he's getting something in return for taking this contract because no one wants it, and the Leafs can't have him. So you have him. Life is about leverage. I don't care if it's about with your kids, if it's daily work, supply and demand, but leverage. Leverage in negotiating contracts. Leverage. Heck. If I want to go to a bar on a Friday night and I've been out Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, well, I don't have much leverage with my girlfriend to go out Friday night. Even if all my buddies are going, it's a hard sell. If I haven't been out in 2 months, I got pretty good leverage. Babe, I'm going with my friends. Oh yeah, babe, no problem, because I have the leverage. The leverage here was all with every other team negotiating against Kyle Dubas and the Leafs. No one wants Marleau's contract, especially the Leafs, and everyone knows the Leafs have to get rid of it. Got no leverage. Everyone thought that Kapanen or Johnsson was going to be the one that had to leave with the Marleau contract. Like we saw Carolina pick up Teräväinen when they picked up the Bickle contract from the Chicago Blackhawks. Because they had the leverage over Chicago. Chicago had to get rid of Bickle. They couldn't afford it. They couldn't afford it. So they were great guys in Carolina and said, we will take the Bickle contract. But you got to give us Teräväinen. They did it. Been a damn good player for Carolina. Damn good. And we're going to see more and more of that. We're going to see more and more of it this week, next week, going through. That's part of today's NHL. Eating contracts, eating money, and giving us Christmas presents, essentially, in return. So a first rounder, everyone say, oh my God, it's a first rounder. Yeah, it's a first rounder. But Toronto, where they should be with their team, everything intact, that's a pick between 20 and 30. They're going to be top 10 in the league. They should be top 10 in the league. And that pick isn't playing for at least a few years to come, if he ever plays. But at least a few years to come, probably. It could end up being a dominant player. It could end up being Jerome Iginla, who was traded from Dallas as part of the Nieuwendijk deal back in the day. But right now it's just a pick that we never know if it's going to play. And the main thing is the Leafs going forward don't lose anything off their roster. Hell, you might be able to get that pick back at some point, parlaying another player. But Kyle Dubas did a masterful job. Going to be signing Kapanen, going to be signing Johnsson. We have to wait on Marner, but getting rid of Marleau. So if you're a Leafs fan out there, you should be very, very happy with where you sit. It's going to be a busy week. Crazy, crazy, crazy busy week. A lot of speculation, again, with teams being able to talk to future free agents or free agents that are coming up in a little bit. Here's just the list of UFAs on the market. Crazy. We know the RFAs, and they're probably likely to stay with their teams. So I'm not going to get into the RFAs quite yet and talk about Rantanen and Marner and Braden Point. I mean, there's a plethora of guys that are going to sign, but I don't want to get into them because I think they all stay with their teams, and barring an offer sheet, which we is like the abominable snowman or Bigfoot, who we just don't see them. So until I see one, I don't get much into that part of it because I just don't think an offer sheet comes. And the last one we saw was Shea Weber and it was matched. So until I see one, I don't believe it. We'll get into negotiations at some point next week or if we hear things aren't going well with certain players. But how about the UFAs? I have never seen an RFA and then a UFA class like this. Here's just the forwards. Panarin, Duchesne, Pavelski, Zuccarello, Lee, Nyquist, Williams, Thornton, Ferlin, Simmons, Dzingel, Brassard, Spezza, Filppula, Pominville, Donskoy, Johansson, Maroon, Connolly, Chiasson. I mean, that's a hell of a fucking list. That's a hell of a list. And most of those guys will be moving on to new teams. You talk about changing the dynamic of your team. And that's why people overpay. That's why we call it crazy, silly season. GMs lose their fucking mind because you get to add one of those guys to your roster without giving up anything. Nothing. It just costs you more money. And we talk about leverage again. There it is. These players, their agents know. They know they got the leverage. They got you by the balls. Everyone knows that Florida right now would love Panarin and Bobrovsky. They would have been a playoff team last year if they had goaltending. So Bobrovsky's sitting back going, there's only a few places in the league that there's a goaltending spot available. Florida's one of them. He's going to make them pay. They desperately need, with the hiring of Quenneville and being where they are and the market that they live in, to have some success, to start building success. So they start making some money in Florida. Panarin knows it too. You start adding a guy like Panarin to the mix, and who knows? Maybe this team is, you get Bobrovsky, you get Panarin, you already have Barkov, one of the great two-way forwards in the game. You have Mike Hoffman already there. Now you might have to move Hoffman if this happens. But, I mean, Trocheck, and there's just Dadonov. I mean, you look at the back end with Ekblad and Matheson. There's just so much good there. So these guys know it's going to be a crazy, and we're going to look at these numbers and go, holy fuck. Holy fuck. Don't think the New York Rangers aren't going after Panarin too. He's going to make a shitload. I think he ends up in Florida. I think the number's around $10.5 million a year. No state tax, by the way, there. No state tax. But we are going to see crazy, crazy, crazy numbers. I told you, I'll keep you up to date on all the stuff. I'll probably have a few emergency podcasts just to address guys getting signed or where we think that they're going to be. And again, I will add guests next week. I told you the guests earlier. We're going to have John Scott and Marty St. Louis, Dave Andrechuk, Paul Bissonnette, just to name a few going forward. So we're going to hear some great stories. I just want to tell a story about the draft because it is a draft show and free agency a little bit. But it's funny, I was at the Roxy with a bunch of the GMs and coaches and scouts along the way and former players that were there in different roles. And I saw like four or five players in there that are underage. At least some of them were underage. I'm looking at them and I go, you guys are fucking stupid. How stupid do you have to be in a bar, underage drinking, with these guys there? Now, they were kind of smart a little bit. They were in the back room. So at least they were hiding out a little bit. I'm not going to mention their names because I don't think that's fair. They're young kids and you can make a mistake. And it's not a big, big deal. But just, these guys should have their parents or people advising them a little better. I do remember a story of my draft in 1992, and we were all at the bar. I mean, every one of us. Now, the drinking age was 18. We were all 18. It was in Montreal. And in Quebec, you're allowed to drink at 18. So we're all out, and Montreal is an unbelievable spot. That's where the draft is next year. Going to be amazing. If you've never been to a draft, next year is the place to go. Montreal does it right. Vancouver was amazing. Montreal is a special spot. But I remember after the draft, everyone's wearing their jerseys out and their hats out. Everyone, every bar is just jammed on Crescent Street, downtown Montreal. And I was in there. I'm sitting at the bar with my friends. My uncle was there. My mom was there. My brother, they were all in a different corner. I was with my friends at the bar. And I remember, like, I'm surrounded by jerseys and hats. Surrounded with jerseys and hats. And all I remember was looking up and seeing John Muckler and Donnie Luce, Don Lever. So it was the coach and GM, essentially. Actually, no, it wasn't. Sorry. John Muckler was only the coach then. The GM was Jerry Meehan. He was not there. But it was John Muckler and one of our scouts and Larry Carrier, the guy that drafted me, who is now an assistant GM in Montreal. And Donnie Lever, who is an assistant coach. And they come up to me at the bar and just looked at me. They didn't care that I was having a beer. I was of age. And it was jammed with guys having beers. So I really didn't make a big deal of it. It wasn't a big deal. But they said, why aren't you wearing your jersey or your hat? They thought that it was odd that I'd be the only guy not without a jersey and hat. And I just looked at them. I go, if you think I need a jersey and a hat to get laid in Montreal, well, you don't know me. And they started laughing. I started laughing. But it was true. When everyone's wearing a jersey and a hat, I played junior in Montreal and Quebec City, so I knew the town. But I just thought it was pretty funny. Not that I wasn't proud. I probably should have been wearing something from them, but it was a funny story for those guys to watch. They were like, oh, valid, true. And they just said, have a good night. Don't get too drunk. And we're happy to have you on our team. So it was a great time. I remember my draft so much. And I remember, again, going back to just seeing these parents with the kids. Great, great day. The work starts now, but great, great day. I just want to reiterate, you can follow me on Twitter. Matt Barnaby 3636, Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby. You can get this on a multitude of spots. And with Periscope now, that's going to be on Twitter. I'm still learning it, but you can listen to me at deanblundell.com. Always a great place to go and watch for some videos. He's got terrific content there. My podcast is there. iTunes, thank you. Spotify, thank you. And you can always catch me 4 to 6 p.m. on SiriusXM. NHL Network, Channel 91, with my co-host, Steve Koulias, who I have to have on at some point soon. He's awesome. Great guy, full of life. Great, great stories. I talked about drafts in the past. And it really is the chance to get there. But it doesn't mean you're going to play just because you're drafted. There's guys that will come out of nowhere and play. I talked about David Cooper my year. My year was the 1992 draft. David Cooper went 11th overall, ended up playing 30 games. Joseph Tierney was our second rounder. Andre Steiner was our third rounder. Dean Melanson was our fourth rounder. I was the second pick in the fourth round. So combined, the four guys before me played 40 games. I played 834. Yuri Himalev was drafted two picks after me. He was a fifth rounder, but his second pick he was like 105 when we drafted him. He played 263 games. The next year, our first pick was a second rounder, Denis Seguirov. First of all, he brought a hooker to the Christmas party. Weird dude. Looked like Ronald McDonald. Great quick story on him. Only played 51 games in the league. Big guy, big defenseman. But by the way, that year, the 11th rounder was Scott Nichol, played 662 games. So if you see the correlation, doesn't matter where you're drafted, it's hard to pick. But Denis Seguirov, great story on him. We trade him to LA in the Alex Jitnik trade. And he gets hit by a puck in a game, a slap shot. And he calls 911. 911 answers and says, "Hey, can I help you?" And in broken English, Dennis says, I'd be shot. So all of a sudden, about 20 minutes later, the cops come and ambulance come. And they're all outside. The lights are going off. The lights are coming off. And they come in. And he just comes walking out of the house with a limp. And the cops are like, where have you been shot? Where have you been shot? He goes, in the foot. And he's like, big slap shot. Fucking guy called 911 because he had a broken foot. It was broken. But in LA, you call and you say you've been shot, you better be shot. That was probably a $1,000 bill just to get a ride to the hospital. So not one of the brightest guys ever, but again, the correlation. 1994 Buffalo. These are all Buffalo drafts, by the way. I just picked them because they were my first team. Did really well. Wayne Primo, 17th pick overall, 774 games. Curtis Brown, my ex-linemate, roommate, second round, 736 games. And they picked Shane Knighty in the seventh round, 550 games. Steve Webb in the seventh round, 321 games. Pretty impressive. Next year, again, rounds one and two, or actually two in the first round, 14th and 16th overall. Jay McKee was 14th overall, 802 games played. Marty Baron, first rounder, 508 games. So you just see there's, it doesn't mean because you're a first rounder or a second rounder that you're going to play. I think they're getting a little bit better at it now with first rounders really getting a chance. I think we see a lot more just with the ability and the skill level that we can see from these players. But it really starts the day after the draft. What are you willing to do to make the NHL? And will you adapt your game? Are you willing to adapt your game to get to the level where you want? Some are. Some aren't willing. Because just because you score 100 points in junior, I scored 111 points in junior, didn't mean that I was going to be a scorer in the NHL. I knew I wasn't. We had Pat LaFontaine, Alexander Mogilny, Dale Hawerchuk. I had to adapt, and I had a different role that I had also in junior, but I knew the correlation between me scoring in junior and scoring in the NHL was not going to be to the same level. So I had to find a role that was going to get me there. For those parents out there, for those kids out there, be honest with yourself and recognize what's going to get you to that next level. If you can do that, you're giving yourself the best chance. If you stay pigeonholed in your inability to adapt, you're going to struggle. You're going to struggle. And I think it's easier to make a bottom six than it is a top six, and a bottom pair than a top pair. Those guys play in the league for 15 to 20 years. Probably closer to 15 now. So be able to adapt. Be able to put the partying aside. Lots of time to party. Lots of time to have your drinks and have your fun. But while you're in it, focus. Focus your fucking mind on it. Questions today. Some good ones, actually. Some really good ones. Not that they aren't always good, but I think some really good ones today. At Rob Collects, most memorable, say that 10 times quick, draft moment. For me, honestly, it's just hearing my name picked. You know, I was last overall in my junior draft. I actually didn't find out I was drafted till the next day. And we didn't have the internet then. We didn't have social media. I found out the next day. I actually left the draft three or four rounds early because I was so upset. So just hearing my name drafted in the fourth round by the Buffalo Sabres was an incredible feeling. Pulling the jersey over, putting my hat on, looking at my brother, my mother, my grandmother, my uncle, my friends. It's the greatest feeling. Greater than scoring a hat trick on Mother's Day. Greater than knocking Montreal out of the playoffs. Greater than my first NHL game or my first NHL goal. Putting that jersey on and hearing my name called was certainly the best thing about the draft and probably the best thing in my career. What is the draft steal? From at Prawn Jeremy 14. Draft steal to me is Johnny Beecher. Cole Caulfield in Montreal, best goal scorer, and to drop down to where he did at 15. Concerns about his size? I have no concerns. I watched Alex DeBrincat and Jr. score three straight seasons of 50 goals. I watched what the fuck this kid did this year with 72 goals. The kid can score. The kid can score. He played against my son, and I was so impressed with the multiple ways that he can score. It's just not one way. It's just not a one-timer. It's just not breakaways. He scores cross-grain. He scores pulling up. He scores one-timers. He goes to the net hard. So many things he does well, and that will correlate to the National Hockey League. At go, Habs go. Why would Nashville trade their best defenseman 2 times in 3 years? They must have inside info on signing Duchesne. They did trade their best defenseman in Shea Weber to get PK Subban. And it was big contract for big contract, more term on it for a guy like Shea Weber. But I think they looked at a guy probably more in his prime in PK at the time and on less of a cap hit. When they acquired PK, and now they had to move PK because Roman Josi is going to want $9 million on his next deal. He's cap friendly now with just over $4 million, but it's in a cap world. You got to get rid of great players. I don't think they want to get rid of PK Subban, but the fact is they need money for Roman Josi. And yes, I don't know if they have inside info, but I know they want to sign Matt Duchene. And what it's going to cost is a lot of money. Around $10 million. So you can't have your cake and eat it too. You have to make tough decisions. I don't think they wanted to trade him, but they had to trade him. And they found a team willing to eat all $9 million of that contract. Great job by David Coyle. At Heavy Metal Dano. I remember a couple years ago on Twitter, you said that you had some Bob Probert stories. Don't know if you ever told them or not. I will definitely tune in to hear them. Anniversary of his death is in about 2 weeks. Unfiltered with Matthew Barney. I'm going to give you a Bob Probert, the one I use the most, and one of my favorites is with Brad May. We were in Chicago the night before a game, and we were having a couple beers. We probably had a couple too many. An afternoon game. And after a few, Brad looked at me and says, hey, $500. Neither of us had fought Bob Probert. $500 to the guy that fights Bob Probert first. I'm like, fuck yeah, $500? I'm in. First shift, we're on the same line. I go after Proby, and Proby's like on the wall, and I start pushing him, and I drop my gloves. And Proby looks at me. Of course, he's not afraid of me. He drops his gloves, and we're about to go at it, and Brad comes flying in, and kind of gets his gloves off and tries to fight Proby, and we just end up in the penalty box, all three of us. So I go, what the fuck are you doing? I said, I was fighting him. He goes, nah, I'm not letting you. I'm getting him first. So Proby looks down and doesn't say a word, just comes back out. A couple shifts later, we're in front of the net, and Maisie goes after Proby and drops his gloves and goes after him, and Proby's kind of looking at him, pushing him, shoving him. I come in, and there's like a little melee, and four of us end up in the penalty box. And Proby looks down the penalty box and says, what the fuck are you guys doing? Goes, I'm going to fucking kill both of you if you don't fucking stop. Me and Brad, obviously not hungover. We're not drunk anymore from the night before. We just looked at each other like, all right, fucking bets off. This guy's going to kill both of us. He's actually warning us that he's going to kill both of us. So we stop. Straight out of there. We were done. No more Bob Probert. We never fought him. God rest his soul. One of the nicest guys you could ever meet in your life. Obviously, he had some demons, but great guy. Great guy. At Scott Solani, 13. Guessing he loved my roommate, Tamu Solani, who I love. Was an awesome, awesome guy. What was Alexander What was Alexander Degg like when you played with him in junior? Eagle bagel. He was arrogant and cocky and dynamic. He was so fast. We actually, when I played in Victoriaville with him, I only played with him my last 13 games in the playoffs. I think we played six against Drummondville. Then he went first overall that year to Ottawa. Bad pick, by the way. Not a lot of hockey sense. It was just really, really fast. Well, they used to play the Roadrunner when he used to get the puck because he was so fast he'd just blow by defense. He'd have seven breakaways a game, but was a phenomenal junior player. Obviously didn't do what he wanted to do or what people expected him to do in the National Hockey League, but what was he like in junior? Probably the same way he was in the pros. Very cocky. Very about Alexander Degg himself. I don't think he ever really loved hockey. He was just good at it at a young age. Dominant. But yeah, very cocky. Very, very cocky guy. Last one. At RJC Sport. Which teammate was most likely to let themselves into your place and go through the fridge? Also, what did you think of the first time you were in Texas during summer? I'll start with Texas. I moved in. It was like August 27th. Camp starts start of September, like the 3rd or 4th or 5th, depending on what team you play for. But I moved in like August 27th. And I died. Fuck, was it hot. I just remember calling the real estate agent going, I don't think our AC works in here as we're moving furniture. And she goes, this is Texas summer. Get used to it. It was fucking hot. Hot. I sweat like Mike Tyson in a spelling bee. Awful. Awful. You couldn't go in. You would shower, jump into your car to go skate, and you needed a shower by the time you got to the rink. It was so humid and hot. But I love the place. I love the people there. I loved living there. Love the restaurants. Love the how I love absolutely everything about Dallas and no state taxes. Which teammate would get into my place if I had to look back? Definitely Rob Ray. I mean, look at the fucking size of it. Loves to eat. Loves to eat. Famous words. Head. Ponce. Now. Big cranium. Big cranium. He's got to fill that big cranium with food. So Rob Ray would certainly be that guy. Yeah. If you look at, so he married an axe murderer. Go cry yourself to sleep on that huge pillow. I used to tease him with all the quotes from Sorry Married an Axe Murderer, Michael Myers. If you haven't seen it, funny movie. Funny fucking movie. Thanks for listening. Great Twitter questions. Unfiltered with Matthew Barnaby. I'm your co-host, Matthew Barnaby. We'll have a free agent podcast this week. Maybe a surprise one. And then back to a ton of guests. A plethora of unbelievable guests coming up. Again, have a great week. Love you guys. Gonna recover. Off to Toronto in about an hour. Then off to Buffalo to see my little baby, my daughter, graduate high school and off to college. Cheers. Have a great week.